we trust. Charge we're not sure about.
All right, let's rock and roll into episode 65 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. I'm Nigel Poulton, and you know what? There's five of us on the podcast this week. I reckon it's probably only the second time that I can remember that we've got this. So left to right on my Skype screen, Gabriel.
Hey now. That's not mine.
That's
hello.
Fine, right?
Hello, women and children of the planet.
Hello.
Rick. How goes it?
Hey, I'm rocking. I'm gonna one up Gabe on that kind of weak intro there. I don't have a brain this week, guys, so I'm gonna be like half participating. Gabe and I both are in Las Vegas, so we're at the mercy of hotel internet. Or Gabe's probably actually sitting underneath the elevator shaft. No one.
I am actually in my hotel room, which I have an amazingly beautiful view of the Bellagio from the 68th floor of the Cosmo. So I get the huge view of all of downtown Vegas there, or the Strip at least.
And do you have the TV on?
No.
I
never turn the TV on in the hotel.
Gabe had to go to Vegas to get the best
sound
quality
we've ever Wait a minute.
You never turn the TV on?
You never turn the TV on in a hotel?
No, never. I never sit down and watch TV. I just have never sat down and really watched TV. I'm either working or I'm sleeping here.
No. The real reason, guys, is that the hotel remote control is the most unsanitary
big
part of a hotel.
Piece of crap. Oh. Yeah, I've seen that movie.
Oh, man. So what is it like? Are you a germaphobe, Rickatron?
Maybe.
I bet you are. You are, aren't you, Rick?
No, my wife, she's got that into me. So every time I see it, I'm like not touching that.
You mean you don't bring remote wipes with you?
I carry wipes. I carry the lens wipes. They have like an alcohol thing. So surfaces I touch, I do that. I'm reasonable about the matter.
I'm the complete opposite. I lick the door handle and everything to get my immunity built up to every super bug on the planet.
I've seen you doing that.
That's awful. There's a gap in the market potentially there, though. I think we could set up a business to sell to hotels these little wipes to wipe down different parts of your hotel room, because I bet you loads of people are like the Rickatron there and like full-on germaphobes.
Yeah, I would like either the honeymoon sanitation like package, please.
Mm. Yeah, remote prophylactic.
Oh,
That's a plastic bag over the remote. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But, you know, it's all in the marketing, Warren.
Can I just say, you're talking about hotel rooms and hotel TV channels and then putting plastic bags over the remote. It's bringing up images in my head that I just really don't want to have. So, especially about you guys. No offense. No offense, Mr. Naproxen. You're on the podcast again. I heard the rattling there.
Yeah, I thought Rick might need a little bit of painkiller, so I was rattling the Naproxen. And once again, Nigel gets the award for soundbite, you know, recognition.
Yep, there you go.
Unbelievable. Well, of course, it's been Naproxen every time, but still.
Yeah. The strong stuff for you. Nothing else works these days.
I mean, not only do you recognize that what it is, but you remember the word Naproxen.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it sodium Naproxen if you're talking about Aleve?
Yes, although from the generic it says Naproxen sodium. Naproxen sodium.
Oh, I can't interessante.
Even say. Yeah, who knows? It's like Latin.
It does sound like you're getting low on them, Mark. You might need a repeat prescription on that.
I think so.
To guess how many are in there. It sounds like about four to me.
Yeah, I was going to say four myself as well. Go on, crack it open, Mark. Tell us.
Oh, boy. Here it is. They're all out on the table now. Way more than that.
Oh.
This is like playing Risk. I've got little armies out here. I've got 17 of them.
Oh, dear me.
Yeah.
More than four.
Yeah. So we'll see next week how many have.
See how many you've taken. Anyway, Lauren, how are you?
Hey!
I'm well. Yes!
Hey, you were sick last week,
right? Doing well. Oh my gosh, I had like a plague. Well, no, not last week, but the week before. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Lauren, you were sick the week before. Didn't you just forget the podcast last week?
No, I was on it the first time we recorded.
Right, so you're giving away our dirty secrets there, aren't you? Did we have a failed podcast last week?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That's the only answer.
It was a cluster.
Is that right?
But not the one that's awful. Published, though. Yeah.
No. It was an exercise in everything that goes wrong when nobody shows up with any. It was just wrong.
A disaster.
Yeah, it didn't work out. It was a squib or whatever.
A damp squib.
A damp squib.
A mulligan in a podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Tough mulligan there. One a year, we're allowed that.
Right, yeah, we can have a mulligan because you're not there, Nigel. Oh, yeah, it was a bad podcast because Nigel wasn't there.
Yeah, but then you recorded the next day and it was pretty sweet, so.
When I wasn't there, so what does that say about me, I guess?
Indeed, yes. Yeah.
There you go, Lauren, injecting yourself into it again. It's all about Lauren.
LIFO. Last in, first out.
No. That was unfair, what I just said.
I got a thick skin.
Yeah, we'll still send you stickers anyway.
Oh, no, Gabriel, I'm so sorry, mate. I still haven't sent you podcast stickers.
Oh.
If I send them tomorrow, you'll probably get them before Christmas.
That's probably true.
It's how much we love you, man.
Mm-hmm. I know. I know where I rate.
Who here does not have stickers?
Me.
Me.
I don't.
Oh, so it's just you and me that do have them at the moment, Mark. I tell you what, you guys, DM me your mailing addresses and I will post you in Tech We Trust podcast stickers.
And if any listeners out there want them, just go on the channel and let us know. Nigel will send you stickers.
We'll send you some stickers. Cool. Well, should we talk about some tech news?
Sure, why not?
Oh, we're all dead enthusiastic.
I guess that's why we're here.
Yeah, I suppose we are. So what have we got? Right, so a few things actually under the tech news banner. Lots of talk about Google's reinvented cloud platform business unit. People talking about whether or not they can make themselves the de facto platform of choice for data analytics. And I think it was you, Mark, a few weeks ago, when we were trying to decide whether or not Google actually had a play in the cloud business, you mentioned that maybe data analytics might be something that they would do. I know I'm pretty fascinated on the whole cloud thing anyway. Maybe we can talk about that in a second. But also on the topic of Google, they had quite a major brownout earlier on this week, or maybe the back end of last week, a few days ago at least. Some reports suggesting poor performance inside of the Google Cloud platform, resulting in service outages for up to about 24 hours. And I think it's maybe worth a discussion on that topic as to, are we really at the point now where cloud and the kind of tools to leverage it are mature enough that we should be leveraging our apps and our infrastructure across multiple clouds? You know, if we throw all of our eggs into one cloud basket, are we douches for doing that? Anyway, never mind. What else have we got?
Leave us hanging there, Nigel.
I know, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are we or are we not douches?
We are all douches. Also, though, I've got Isilon Storage. It's looking like they are potentially heading towards a software-defined future. So they've just announced or are announcing a version of Isilon for small offices that runs inside of a VM. Maybe that's the writing on the wall for a fully software-defined future for the Isilon platform. I don't know. Cisco ACI heading towards a bare metal future. And I'm really, you know, I'm hearing bare metal loads and loads in the news these days. And I'm starting to wonder if it's the new virtual. And finally, tech news. Windows Server 2016 has apparently been pushed back on its release date again. It's looking like a Q3 release next year. And at this rate, they're going to have to, like, rename it to Windows Server 2017. But there we go. That is the tech news. Now, you know what? I'm going to be cheeky since I've kind of got the mic now. I want to talk about this Google thing first, if nobody minds. So the Google Cloud Platform, we talked about it. It's, I don't know, it really doesn't have an immediate, oh, yeah, if I'm going to do this in the cloud, I'm going to go to Google for it, right? Certainly if you're an enterprise, you're probably not going to want to jump into bed with Google. They're not a trusted partner or anything like that. But I like the idea that, I think it was you, Mark, a few weeks ago, had suggested, well, you know what, they're really good with data analytics, and maybe as big data becomes more and more of an important tool and market and all of that kind of jazz, maybe Google could leverage their own data analytics expertise to sort of chisel out a niche in the cloud as Google Cloud Platform being the cloud platform of choice for big data and data analytics, right?
Yep.
Fair enough. I kind of like it, but are they not running a risk there of kind of, I don't know, exposing their crown jewels, if you will? Like, because obviously for Google at the moment, data analytics is big what they do. You know, it drives all of their ad revenue and things like that. And then by suddenly commercializing or productizing it, do they run a risk of saying, here's, you know, our biggest inner secrets and we're going to offer it as a service? Does that make sense at all? Or am I barking up some kind of ridiculous tree there?
They're not going to have a monopoly on analytics and analytics technology and analytics thinking, you know, so I think they can show leadership and can lead by exposing what they do, providing services around it, both computing services, infrastructure services, application services, and consulting services around analytics. I think they can build a big business around analytics in all ways. And I don't think it'll cut into their business. I don't think they'll lose any secret sauce or give anything away. This is a deep area. And it's going to be developed probably, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years, whoever, you know, who knows how long it's going to continue to be developed. And I think by getting customers involved with them, they can become a de facto standard for how you do analytics in the cloud. But, you know, Amazon's not empty in analytics either. Amazon knows how to do analytics also. So Google, I think, recognizes that and it would be smart for them to try to grab a lead.
Maybe they're just going to use that analytic data to sell your search information back to you.
Do you think we could actually get to the point where Microsoft decides to upload all of its Bing raw data into the Google Cloud platform and get Google's Cloud Analytics to run all their searches for them? Kind of a bit of cloud-on-cloud action there.
This is a family show.
It is a family show.
Not really.
No.
Not really. It's a family show.
I meant the cloud on cloud action.
Oh, no, it's all right. No, I mean, we're a family show. If your family's dysfunctional tech nerds.
Weenies.
Hey, actually, you know what? So sticking with Google and the Google Cloud Platform, right? We tend to bunch them as the big three, right? So Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud Platform. But apparently, and I think it was according to some Gartner research recently, they pitched Google as actually number four behind IBM, which at first I was quite surprised at, right? And I should know more if I'm saying this. I think that must have been based on revenue, right?
I read that too, Nigel. It was. It was based on what people are actually releasing, because I guess Amazon's really the only cloud provider that's truly releasing actual numbers as opposed to the other three or four.
Yeah, so the other three or four are kind of almost obfuscating some of it, aren't they? Because they're not as crystal clear with what's behind all of the numbers, I guess. So I think what I was saying was, though, I was originally like, no way. But then I thought, actually, way, because I don't really know anybody that's seriously using the Google Cloud Platform. Not that I really do about IBM either, but IBM is a trusted like provider to the enterprise and what have you. Kind of wouldn't surprise me if IBM is kind of stealthily just getting on with business and raking in customers without making, you know, a big song and dance about it.
Well, and does it count all of their recent acquisitions? I mean, they just had another one. What was it? Like ClearPath or something like that? Another video cloud something or other. I don't remember the actual name of it, but just yesterday or today. So, you know, yeah, they could be quietly raking it in.
They should be trying to make more noise of it, considering the direction that company's been going and what their earnings calls are like.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, compared to Google. So, I mean, overall, you look at the whole company and it's IBM is struggling to figure out, you know, how to get itself going in the right direction, where Google is, you know, not struggling. Google's struggling with other things, you know, corporate structure and those types of things, whereas IBM is just trying to figure out how to make a buck.
But they've made some pretty decent acquisitions recently in that kind of cloud space, IBM have. And I think, at least from my perspective, there's, I was going to say a general feel, but more of a general hope, right, that in the long game, if they're starting to turn their fortunes around a little bit, if they get their cloud act together and Gartner numbers or the Gartner research based on the numbers that are available seems to be suggesting that might be the case, then you know what? The future might not be too grim for too long for IBM.
Yeah, but I think the revenue that IBM touts here is all tied to consulting engagements. I think when you think of, you know, cloud services, somebody goes to a website, signs up, uploads things, does a bunch of stuff on their own. I bet in the IBM case, these are all people where IBM is thickly in there consulting and trying to, you know, and trying to help these customers do something. But it's not a case where somebody just says, you know what, I'm going to go to this IBM cloud, find it, fire something up, and let's see how cool it is. Right. Which is, you know, certainly the Google thing is self-service. Google needs to move towards a consult, you know, talking earlier about, you know, big data, you know, or data analytics in the cloud. You know, Google needs to create those analytics services, I think, to make that work. But that's probably where IBM's revenue is coming from. Not so much, you know, pure cloud business as much as it is consulting business that puts things in the cloud.
And they're frankly, they're making a much stronger push towards hosted or managed or a more managed model. That's what Blue Box and some of those other purchases were all about. You know, you're gonna see, you know, I was talking with somebody about it, it's like you're gonna see Watson on top of Blue Box on top of Blue Mix as a service or something crazy like that. I mean, it's, you know, the one thing that IBM does well is services and selling those services to specific organizations across the spectrum. And, you know,
Watson,
I would fully
Watson
expect
is a
them,
service.
Watson is a service, yeah.
Waz.
What's up, Watson? But, you know, in that respect, they definitely have, if anybody has like the professional services arm and the consultancy arm to go out and turn cloud into a profit motive, it, I mean, it's IBM. I mean, you see what they've done for pretty much their entire data center practice was to dump all of the hardware outside of Power and Z-Series and then focus on areas where the revenue streams are ongoing annuities. You know, you can count on those service dollars, you know, every month. There's a nice big check coming your way.
There was a really interesting article. Maybe we'll put the links into it this week on Quartz. I'm trying to think of who's the author's name. A guy named Mike Murphy on Quartz wrote an article this week called Searching for Eureka, IBM's Path Back to Greatness and How It Could Change the World. And it's all about what they're trying to do with analytics. A fascinating article. It's not part of the discussion of this show, but I'll put a link in there for it. It's interesting stuff. A little bit of drinking the bathwater at IBM, but interesting nonetheless.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Drinking bathwater. Well, that normally has to do with drinking the Kool-Aid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Totally did not get that.
But much more gross.
I did a one-liner that didn't make any sense today, actually, at work. Something, and I said, well, that's not your grandpa's cloud. I did that today, so there's another one.
Yeah. See, to me, drinking bathwater, like I would say, man, I'd rather drink my own dirty bathwater than do something like that, so I wasn't getting that.
Well, I'm used to the kids peeing in the tub.
Oh,
so.
Please, nice.
Mixing some metaphors here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking this up right now on Google. I'm using Google, and I just Googled drinking bath water, and it's all about mothers trying to keep their babies from doing it. So maybe my little saying there isn't so universal after all.
Never mind. Hey, on the kind of cloud topic front, I suppose, are we getting to the point now where, and actually, are any of you guys seeing this out in the wild, where people are starting to deploy their cloud infrastructure and their cloud-based apps across multiple cloud platforms? So instead of saying, oh, you know what, I'm going to trust a single cloud provider with an app or with my entire business for that matter, right? And say, but you know what, it's kind of safe because I'm deploying it across regions and availability zones and stuff like that. Or are we really getting to the point now where people are saying, you know what, it's just too damn risky to trust any one of them, Amazon, Microsoft, Oracle, IBM, right? And say, you know what, we're actually going to have a policy that says anything that we deploy in the cloud that's like line of business, mission critical, that kind of thing, it must be deployed across two separate cloud providers. Just like what we've been doing in the data center space for years, right, by having like a primary and a secondary data center. Are we seeing any of that out in the wild? And, you know, if we're not, I guess the next question is this going to be more and more important going forward?
I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing people, split zones, but not like split clouds.
I think what will enable the cloud, that split cloud strategy will be containerized workloads. Now that we're starting to see the maturation of the Docker solutions and others with things that are being released currently, if we start to look at it, running it on anything will be the route to market that I think certain organizations will want to take, right? And if I can go out there and, treat anybody, any cloud provider as an infrastructure target to run a workload on, then I'm going to spread the wealth as much as possible based on what my need is and based on what each one of those providers does better. There may be ones that scale faster, have better connectivity, and there may be others that have more availability zones, and I can basically distribute, my workloads accordingly. And then there's also the way, if we look at the way some of those are priced and the way, you may want to keep certain data locality reasons. I mean, if I'm an Amazon customer and I'm in Europe and I have a locality issue and it has to be sitting in the UK, then I'm kind of screwed, right? But if there's another cloud provider that does have its on-premises sites or its hosting is done someplace within my geographical boundaries and I'm legislated to do so, then being able to bring those workloads over there and pin them there is probably something I would look into. Same way that when I would do data pipes into my data center, I would always look for copper from two different vendors because I didn't want to have to rely on one in case one went down.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that this ability in the future to be able to more easily do that, like I liked what you said about, just treat each cloud platform as infrastructure, right? That ability to be able to do that and not care whether it's Google Cloud Platform or Microsoft Azure or DigitalOcean or whoever underneath, do you think that will make public cloud more viable for some traditional enterprises outside of the auspices of things like HIPAA and Sarbanes-Oxley and like regulatory stuff like that? For stuff that's not controlled by regulations, do you think that ability would make more traditional enterprises comfortable with the public cloud?
I mean, we talked about this a little bit. I forget the original topic, but I brought up the Walmart Labs buying OneOps, which was basically, getting, APIs to hook into several different public clouds. And I think that's the whole point of it, right? I think it's more of a financial problem, how much does it cost to be on several different public clouds? But maybe as that comes down, or I think theoretically it's great to be on separate clouds. And theoretically, if we can get something like OneOps or whatever or other vendors are out there doing, or open source projects could be, I guess, too, allowing us to use several different public cloud providers, I think that would be awesome. But yeah, I don't know how. Like you guys are saying, you're not seeing the wild because it's hard to manage and it costs a lot.
I guess it's early days as well, isn't it? But it would be really great for avoiding things like lock-in in certain scenarios.
We got to look to our kind of our tendencies. Would people do, UCS servers and, HP Blades for the same reason? Would they do Oracle and SQL for the same reason? You're going to end up needing different skill sets. And I think that, people kind of want that single stack, single pane, single tool set, categorically. Primary storage, do I have a little bit of EMC to keep NetApp prices low? I don't know. You might want to do some of that, but it might end up overcomplicating is my approach.
I would kind of hope that you would be able to have a tool that would sit on top of it and just talk to the APIs from Azure and AWS and stuff like that underneath. You just have like a common management interface or whatever, right? And you don't really care what's underneath. You don't, or at least you don't need to know the detail.
You know, what's interesting to think about is how Apple's iCloud works. So they don't have their own cloud. They're contracting that out. Right now, nobody talks about big clouds and nobody mentions Apple in there as having a big cloud, and that's because they don't. They're buying services from Azure and AWS and maybe Google, I don't know. But what's interesting to think about is, the way Apple is, if you've ever been around any Apple projects, the way they go and how they work with vendors, there is nobody that squeezes margin out of a vendor better than Apple. You better believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you don't have to blink twice to understand that. And so they're probably doing the same thing with cloud vendors also, right? And my guess is that the iCloud exists on multiple vendors. that, you know, people that have iCloud, they're getting their work done, some on Azure, some on AWS, maybe some on Google. I'm not sure, right? It would be really interesting to know that. It's just something I thought about while this discussion was going on.
Well, you know, Mark, you bring up a good point. So if that group, Apple, can really press margins, I was thinking you were going to say, like, you know, in the States, Walmart's really good about that. But they've got millions, thousands, I don't know, of vendors. Apple probably has a much smaller reign of vendors due to the, you know, relatively limited number of products. But I would be very interested to see, because basically I bet you're right. I bet it's this open standard of sets that are just basically a market that is bid into and accepted, and any in the cloud doesn't matter. I don't think the actual provider, as long as they can adhere to the spec, and I think they absolutely are going to geo-distribute, which it kind of includes using different clouds. I think that's a very interesting one, but very unique, the corner of the corner case type of cloud deployment.
And I would just say, if there's any listeners that know anything about this, if they want to comment anonymously somehow to our LinkedIn channel in one way or another, it would be interesting to hear from you.
Yeah, it would, absolutely.
A quick Google search, there are a ton of different platforms out there right now that are trying to do this, like you're talking about, Nigel, a multi-cloud platform, you know, just hook into the APIs and offer a management.
Yeah. Hey, one last thing on cloud. Do you think we'll get to a point in the future as well where, as traditional enterprises, we would just normally have multiple public cloud providers anyway? You know, like today we've got, I don't know, a vendor or two for storage and the same, you know, a different vendor for servers and a different vendor for networking, right? Might we end up where we've got things like we've got our Office and our productivity packages and email and stuff in the Azure cloud, and we've got maybe analytics in the Google cloud and databases in the Oracle cloud and cloud native apps in AWS? Do you think enterprises will tend towards that kind of a relationship with cloud providers in the future?
Definitely.
I think so. I mean, I think you kind of have to.
I think it's already right? going on.
It's already, I mean, it's already there today. I mean, software as a service offerings. I mean, you can't get everything under one place. And you're going to have, some that specialize in certain things. I mean, let's take, for instance, Virtustream. They specialize in SAP implementations, probably know more about it than anyone else. So obviously the natural course of action would be to choose them if that was how you were going to, you know, go to market, or that's where you wanted to host your cloud-based SAP implementation. Totally makes sense to go that and do that, right? Instead of putting everything under, you know, just like we don't like vendor lock-in for, you know, our hardware, we don't like cloud lock-in either. Why not spread the wealth?
Why not? All right, then we had other things in tech news as well. So we had Isilon apparently heading down the software-defined future. What do we think about that?
Yet another VSA.
Well, I mean, it boils down to it's yet another platform that you need to qualify on hardware that will support it. So, I mean, the whole concept of software defined, and it's like, it's software, I can run it anywhere. I'm like, no, not really. You have to find something, then there's some strict, you know, reasons why you want to run it on one hardware platform over another. And so I've gotten fairly tired of the whole concept of software defined X, because really, software doesn't run on software. You still need some hardware to run it. And there are still key portions of the hardware that need to be qualified, validated, and proved out. So let's kind of, you know, let's bypass this whole concept of, I just buy the software and run it anywhere. Yeah, that may be the case for your, Microsoft Office. It's definitely not the case for your storage platform.
Yeah, but Isilon always had the idea of a certified white box, the delivery anyway, right? They were pushing towards that, where if you get this configuration from this vendor, it's going to work. Boom.
But the question for me, right, is there's a lot of talk about everything being software defined, right? It seems like it's the cool thing to say. Every product's got to be software defined, right? Otherwise it's legacy, yeah? But every time we kind of have this discussion, it seems like it just makes life harder for the customer. They've got to do the qualification. They've got to follow a hardware compatibility matrix, and you know the risk of something going wrong in the config seems to be increased. So why do they all do it then, if it makes the customer's life harder? And no doubt it makes EMC Isilon's life harder in supporting those configs, I would have thought.
I think part of it's just, hey, we can offer this. This gets us in the door, but let me tell you also that it's probably not going to work as well. So you might as well just buy the hardware item, you know.
It removes a lot of the hardware certification things from the storage vendor. It says, if you work with the HCL for the hypervisor, we'll work with you. Right?
Okay.
Much easier for Isilon that way.
Fair enough. Because the only thing I could think was that it potentially leads to the possibility of running things like Isilon or whatever it happens to be, right, on public cloud platforms. So on top of an instance in AWS or Azure or Google or wherever, yeah? And if companies are moving more towards these public clouds, at least in the meantime, does it open up potential markets that might be locked out if there was only a hardware version?
I think it's a lot harder than – it's a lot more difficult than it sounds to do something like this, right? Because you're going to have to go out there and qualify and vet it. I can see how you could do it at Amazon. Like, we'll say, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to use, you know, S3 for storage. I'm going to use a specific instance in AWS, a large, you know, M1 or whatever it might be, and then qualify it on that. I've seen that done with some solutions now. Like, you know, Simplivity and Nutanix both had a cloud-based backup solution, and you had to run a specific instance of their platform running on AWS. But my question, I guess, then tends to be, look at your typical Isilon customer, media content creator. Do they really want to incur the challenge of running all of, you know, their 5 to 6 petabytes of data that they're generating on any given period of time, getting it up into Amazon? And do they get any value out of doing that instead of running it on premises? You know, I think that there's probably a market for some of this stuff, but I think it's fairly nascent, fairly specific. And I would see, you'd probably see specialized managed service providers coming up with that offering instead of it being a general public consumable from AWS, because it's going to compete against the AWS storage offerings that they offer.
I don't think Amazon cares as long as they have the customer land there.
I think in the long run, they would probably try and pinch those customers and try and bring an Amazon native service out that's similar and simpler and more integrated. I just know that from talking to some of the storage startups that are partnering with Amazon, they are worried that in the long run, Amazon will take their business back off them. So they feel like they're plugging a gap at the moment, providing a better storage service than Amazon currently does. But they feel that Amazon are watching them all the time and saying, you know what, if this is popular, we're going to copy it and integrate it as part of, like, you know, more integrated into the Amazon Web Services dashboard and just claw those customers back.
They are the worst partner in the world in that respect. Yeah, they think everything belongs to them.
Yeah.
True. Good point.
Hey, can we just switch gears slightly? Because I know that time is running short. We're talking there about software-defined everything, right? But something else that's coming up a lot now is the term bare metal. You know, it's not that long ago that running something on bare metal was like, oh my goodness, thou shalt not run anything on bare metal. Everything must run within a VM. Then we mentioned just a few minutes ago, Cisco ACI is heading towards a future that includes at least bare metal, right? I'm starting to wonder, is bare metal the new virtual? I don't know, Lauren... Do you have anything to say on that, Lauren? You are our resident ACI guru.
Yes. So, again, Mark, disclaimer, I work for Cisco.
Oh, I was just expecting no comment.
No. So we've always worked with bare metal, right? That's kind of our thing, is that we've worked with both virtualization and bare metal as far as creating the software-defined networking and being able to apply policies to both realms, right? Your virtual and your physical. So the register, the title they used was a little misleading. What we just recently announced was that we're now able to do micro-segmentation not only in the virtual realm, but also in your physical realm now. So by micro-segmentation, we mean we can basically isolate servers, whether they be VMs, containers now, because we announced we had some Docker announcements there too, and bare metal. So what we're seeing is, you know, 70% of your workloads may be virtual, but 70% of your physical servers may actually be physical. So while most of your workloads are running on virtual VMs, basically, you still have a lot of physical servers in your environment. So and we don't see that changing. It's kind of plateaued. You know, we've always said you watch the VMware graph of, you know, headed to 100% virtualization, but we're just not seeing that. And again, I work for Cisco, but we're seeing it plateau at around 70%.
Well, there's a market for that non-virtualized space, and it really comes down to high-performance computing, business intelligence, and friends, that is a market that is exploding. So to have these types of programmatic interfaces, management, you know, deployment levels for those workloads, it's really given the benefits that, you know, we've come to fancy in the virtual space, and we're giving it to these BI and data warehousers that really were doing their own thing and no real sophistication. It's probably long overdue, if you ask L. Ricketron.
L. Ricketron. I mean,
is there any
L. Ricketron running?
I'm just curious. Is there any benefit at all to running Docker on top of a hypervisor?
I think aside from security.
Well, we've addressed this before. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Maybe one for another week.
Yeah, possibly. That's a good idea.
Should we pivot on to hot or not?
Yeah, why not? Let's do that. Sure. That's hot. I mean, hot or not is hot.
So is our new hot or not segment hot or not? Anyway, so on hot or not, Lauren, you're up first, and we're not asking whether you're hot or not, but you've got something to throw out to the five of us, right? Or to the four of us, I guess, and then I've got something after you, so take it away.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, speaking of physical and whatnot, a few weeks ago, Amazon announced that they're going to offer basically a bare metal server, a hosted server, dedicated, no noisy neighbors, none of that. And then yesterday or today, Rackspace announced their on metal version 2, which is an enhancement of their same product of basically offering like a dedicated server to companies so that they can essentially have a physical server hosted in the cloud. What do you guys think? Hot or not? Is this the way of the future?
Not.
Not. Not.
Nigel says not. All right.
Oh, I think we're all nots, aren't we? Gabriel?
Not.
Oh, that's four nots.
Oh, is this different than any kind of hosting? It's just big deal, Amazon.
It's kind of like a colo,
well,
if you
my
ask
question...
me.
It's a colo. It's really a colo and Amazon. Oh, great.
My question is, shouldn't we be working on developing apps that can work in the cloud? I mean, this almost seems like a regression to me. Aren't we supposed to be working on cloud native apps, basically, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. And you know what? A while ago, when I looked at some of the pricing for having a dedicated physical server inside of Amazon Web Services, man, oh man, you would have needed deep pockets for that. I just didn't get it.
Why not just have a hybrid solution?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it sounds to me like they did this just so they could get into some Gartner Magic Quadrant or something.
Could be.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, could be.
You know, it's like, in order to be in this quadrant, you have to do a colo thing, right, the way Gartner is.
Or, yeah, to meet the definition, to at least not say no, but to get the tick box right.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I'm struggling and thinking for another reason why they might want to offer services like that. I cannot see it being popular. That is a big, big not from me.
Okay, thumbs down.
Not
unanimous.
All right, then. Shall we have a second one then? So here's an interesting one, right? True story. A few weeks ago, my oldest daughter and I were in the car and she was talking about something she was doing at school. And we wanted to know how many trees there were on the planet per human being. Or in fact, actually, it may have been, were there more trees than humans? Anyway, what we did was, because I'm like a techno-savvy hip dad, I unlocked my phone, asked Google, how many trees are there on the planet? And it came back with a big number. It was apparently 400 billion, something like that. And we worked out, and it also worked out how many trees there were per human being. And it was a lot. It was like something like 60 per human being. And I felt all cool about that, right? Hey, how cool am I? How clever is dad, right? You just ask Google. Google knows everything. So my question, right, based on what's been in the news this week, that apparently we don't think it's 400 billion trees anymore. Apparently it's slightly more, 3 trillion. Or, or apparently anything in between those two numbers, or even less or more, what the hell? So I want to know, is asking Google hot or not?
Yeah, Siri anything.
Well, not, oh my, because not, because you know what? Remember, I think we've all seen it. You used to do Google Maps directions from Tokyo to China, and it included getting on a jet ski. Do you guys remember that anomaly? If you asked for driving directions from Japan to China, it would take you a long route, and it said jet ski across the Sea of Japan. It literally said that for a while. I say not, because people still need to use their brain.
Yeah, but you don't have one this week, remember?
That's harsh.
No, but that's a good point, Gabriel. I'm not so sure people are these days. Like, I revert to asking Google stuff all the time, probably far too much. And you know what? I just assume that it's right. I mean, how crazy is that of me?
So Google gave you that answer, not Wikipedia.
Well, I think so. What it did was, you asked Google, I was driving at the time, I think. So, of course, my daughter unlocked my phone and I shouted across to Google, how many trees are there on the planet? And it reads out, and I think it's like a summary from Wikipedia or somewhere else. But the concept is asking Google hot or not, yeah?
I think I need to disagree with you guys. I think I got to go with hot still, because yeah. I'm still going to do it. And perhaps we, you know, it's like the pretentious person, Gabe, who says he doesn't watch TV, you know? Like, you got to use your analytical brain.
Hey, like, you know what? Real quick, Lauren. So, Rick, you've seen this before. Anton had a T-shirt that said, Google, ask me.
That's right. Second smartest guy I know walks around with a T-shirt saying that.
Okay.
There goes family friendly.
Yeah, I can beep that out. But that's the point, though, Lauren, right? Like, even though, I don't know, I might tend to say it's not hot, I'm totally still going to do it tomorrow and the day after and the day after. So I don't know whether hot or not's the right question, because it could be really, you know, we could get four knots here and I would still do it.
I think it's completely mundane. I think, you know, it's like getting in my car and driving to the store. That's not hot, but I do it all the time.
Uh-huh.
Just because I do it doesn't mean that it's hot.
I don't know, Mark. That might be pretty hot.
You're not driving the right kind of car if that's not.
I'm not going to the right store.
Yeah, we want to tell Google to go to the store with our car, get our stuff, and bring it back. Now that would be hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was using Google to set up a secret rendezvous, that would be hot. But then everyone would know, or at least Google would know.
Yeah.
I think keeping secrets from Google is what's hot.
Oh, that is
hot. I think doing things so Google doesn't find out about it is really where it's at. That's
you can't
hot.
Touch that hot. Yeah. That is hot.
The opt-out of Google.
At the beginning of next week's podcast, when you rattle your sodium naproxen tablet, yeah, I'm going to ask Google, how many tablets does Mark have this week? And see if Google knows. And if it knows, then Google is hot.
Oh, I'm sure it knows.
Shall we switch back to some business news? Because we've got some interesting stuff here, actually. So, business news. What the hell is going on with SpringPath, okay? They're cancelling events. They've canned their PR company, apparently. Comings and goings at the top amid rumours of them being acquired. So that's numero uno on the business news there. Lenovo and Nutanix, this is interesting as well, right? They've shacked up to apparently rule China and then potentially rule the world. And HPE intensifies its lovemaking with Microsoft. I've scripted this, by the way. HPE intensifies its lovemaking with Microsoft over Azure, public cloud, and on-prem offerings. You know what? I can't help but wonder if that has, or if that's something that VMware needs to worry about in the long run. And finally,
intensifying.
HPE.
Intensifying.
Yeah.
That's intensifying.
Who's that?
Whatever, dude.
Is that you, Mark?
That was the ghost of Farley. That
that's a good
crazy.
Voice, that. That's as good as Lauren's. I got one last one. HPE looks like they're full of love as well for Scality on the object storage front. And I'm wondering, does that mean their own store all object storage product? Is that like, as the death knell sounded for that? Don't know.
Dung. It was object store.
Apparently, I'm guessing that's why it's...
kind of like they had a hyper-converged solution too.
Right.
Dung. Yeah.
So can we talk about SpringPath? Does anybody have anything that they know or would like to say about SpringPath?
I mean, there's been rumors. I mean, it's one of two things, you know? I mean, they hint at it in the article. I mean, when somebody cuts off the phone and cuts off the PR and some of these things, then they're either going to get acquired, right? Or somebody's going to get fired for screwing up all of the marketing and PR stuff.
Right.
I mean, so nothing's been announced on it, and all of this stuff happened. Right. When has this been in the news? Is it like 5 days ago, 4 days
something
ago?
I mean, what's, like that, yeah.
You know, something's going funny here, right? I mean, why, either they, you know, they got all nervous and excited and everything, or the deal's not. They jumped the gun and the deal's not happening or something. You know, why do all this silly stuff, you know, and I don't get it. You know, a lot of the times these things go on. No, there's no signal in advance. Boom, it happens. Here it's kind of like, oh, something's happening. You know, what the hell? It's not how you do it.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because before I started reading around some of the rumors about the potential acquisition, right, I fired them into Crunchbase. And my initial reaction was like, are these guys going out of business here? Because they've had, according to Crunchbase, $34 million of investment from one round of funding more than 3 years ago. And, I mean, look, that's a lot of money to burn through in 3 years, but it's very doable, right? And at first I was like, oh, good grief, is that the end of SpringPath? Then, of course, I started reading the rumors. You know, everybody's saying, oh, they're potentially going to get picked up by whoever. I think the main rumor at the moment, and I will say it is only a rumor, is that Cisco are about to pick them up. Appreciate no comment, Lauren.
She didn't say that. No, I mean, you should just ask her if she's got a comment.
Yeah, what's the official stance on that, Lauren? Give us the detail. How much and when will it be signed? When will the ink be put to paper?
Well, you know, Chuck and I were sitting around the other day just
exactly
chatting.
Lauren is the official mergers and acquisitions spokesperson for the Cisco organization.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But the thing is, right?
They don't tell me shit.
Rumors aside, right, assume they do get acquired by Cisco or by somebody, right? Does this have a major knock-on effect to the likes of Simplivity? Obviously, they do a fair bit of business through Cisco, but also Nutanix, right, who are making their own endeavors into the potentially, I'm assuming, potentially large Chinese hyper-converged market. But what are the knock-on effects?
No, I don't assume that, it's China only, right? I mean, I don't think Lenovo can only sell to China.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm suggesting by partnering up with a Chinese company, that gets you a lot of kudos and favors within China and really opens that market up to them, right?
I mean, I also think, though, that I think if people look at Lenovo as just an extension of IBM in this particular case, because it's IBM-designed servers. I mean, really nothing has changed from day one to day two when Lenovo took over ownership of it, other than, the paper that owns it sits in another country.
But that's politically very important in China, right?
I mean, I think so. If you're going to do business in China, to be honest, I would be personally terrified of doing any business in China. Because how long is it going to be before somebody – well, not only that, but you know somebody's going to take that box and peel all the parts and layers back and clone it. And, you know, I mean, there's Apple Store clones in China. I don't want any of my burgeoning technology that's, you know, where the value of my organization is based on the intellectual property I've created.
But they don't have a lot of intellectual property, do they?
Who?
Nutanix.
I think they have a fair amount of it.
I wouldn't say it's I'm not aware of it being massive.
But put it this way, I mean, it doesn't have to be massive. There's a fact that they've done all the work and effort. Now, if I'm some other competitor that wants to capture the Chinese market, hey, they just had, you know, they started in 2009 and it's 2015. Well, there's 6 years of development and whatnot that they can just leapfrog, right? So
maybe, yeah. But being,
you know, I mean, there's no maybe about it. I mean, they will basically take whatever you built and clone it and then basically sell it internally, and you're not going to get any of that market.
Well, I get that. And certainly if it was like Nutanix partnering with IBM, another US company, and trying to get into China, I would say, yeah, totally. But because they've got a big Chinese company behind them, and I'm only speculating here, right, does that not mean that internally there would be – it would be more difficult for somebody to clone it and rip it off because you'd have a big Chinese company coming hunting you down, right? And it's pure speculation.
I don't think anybody in China gives a rat's ass about intellectual property.
Maybe.
You should see
maybe
what was happening to KFC in China, friends. They love fried chicken.
Right.
One of them I just put on our Slack channel is OFC for Obama fried chicken. They've got MFC for Mao fried chicken.
This is hilarious, photo, Megatron. Where did you find it?
Hey, man, Elton John spends a lot of time.
FBC, on KLC, exactly. KFC,
you have to
MFC.
Put this in show notes on.
Yeah.
My God.
Good grief.
Yeah.
So I think you nailed it there, Gabriel. They don't give a rat's ass about intellectual property.
And it's not like there's a court you're going to go sue somebody in.
Okay, well, aside from that then, if SpringPath is picked up by a big server vendor, what's the knock-on impact there for Nutanix and for Simplivity?
It depends on how company who buys them wants to bring that product to market, how long it takes them to ramp it up and get it to market, and you know what the comp structure looks like. I think that, you know, let's hypothetical this. Let's say Cisco represented Simplivity and Nutanix, and now they have a SpringPath offering, right? You're still going to have instances where one of those beats out the other in terms of what the customer wants, right? And then they very may well, you know, offer all three offerings still. Look, I mean, Dell's going to have half a dozen hyper-converged offerings, and they're not just going to cut those things away because they got these other solutions as well. It's, you know, they're going to be specific markets where one of those platforms works better than the other, and I just think it's another route to market for Cisco to capture hardware sales. So I wouldn't count a Simplivity out of the discussion when it comes to having, if let's say Cisco has SpringPath in their stable, because they have about 15 other hyper-converged products right now that they offer. Mm-hmm. They offer Store Magic. They offer Grid Store. They have partnerships with, you know, Maxta and all these other solutions out there. It's like, and they still somehow, you know, they want to sell more UCS boxes, and you know they're not going to depreciate all those relationships to sell just one UCS box when they can sell potentially 20x more based on the different type of solution and use case.
And just because an acquisition is made doesn't mean that the eventual product becomes successful. Right there, you can look at flip cameras yeah. and Whiptail and others too, right? That, you know, acquisitions that Cisco has made in particular, but we could point to many other companies and failed acquisitions.
True, we could. Hey, I've got a final question for everyone then, and I should have done this during Hot or Not. HPE as the name of an organization. Okay, I get that it's HP Enterprise. But HPE, I can't say it properly. It doesn't roll off the tongue for me like HP does. HPE is kind of, try and say it fast. It's really hard.
Nigel, just go the way you've always said it. You go, Hewlett-Packard. Enterprise. Just roll it like that, bro.
No. So I want to know, is HPE, is that not the company, but the rebranding, is the HPE rebranding, is that hot or not?
It's your use of proper English that's getting in the way.
It probably is. You're right. You guys can probably say it like a treat.
Are we going to include their logo too?
HPE.
Yeah, let's include their logo actually, because I do
like
that
logo.
You call
that a logo?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Did they turn the E sideways?
They made a rectangle.
Yeah, that green rectangle. But it's dead simple.
Are you kidding me?
It was quite good on the like animations they were doing at HPE Discover. Because I like got there and I was like, who, you know, honestly, somebody's been paid millions for doing effectively the Emperor's New Clothes there and saying, I've got a green box here. That's your new logo. And everyone's like, woohoo.
Guess what? No one except HPE executives and analysts who have to use it is going to call it HPE. Everyone else is just going to call it HP.
So am I missing it? Am I like not hip and cool enough? Should I just be calling it HP? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they outsourced the logo design to the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely.
I thought they had a kid do it in paintbrush. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. So the Enterprise, what's the other one? I forgot.
It's just HP, isn't it?
The Packard.
HPC, is that HP Consumer?
HPNNE.
That is clear.
HP not. HP, no, that's not. It's going to be HPNGM. HP not going to matter.
Ooh.
Gabriel Chapman is hot. That's what I say.
He gives a rat's ass about printers and peripherals.
It's a lot of innovation in those products.
Oh, it is not.
If you've got an 8-year-old printer, no, there's Wi-Fi printing. You can print from your iPad.
Yeah, and it never works.
Oh, yeah, the printing part is not technology, but somehow connecting to an iPad is hot.
Just saying that those consumer electronics, they've improved a lot. You know, I mentioned last week about the Wi-Fi, this week about, or maybe, you know, it's the other podcast, but I need a new router. so I'm getting a new Netgear. I was surprised at what the Wi-Fi things can do today. Now, printers have come a long way, too. I'm just saying, if you've got like a 6- and 8-year-old thing like that, you know, check it to see what's new. It's come
okay, up. Next week, Wi-Fi printers hot or not hot?
Oh, boy. I'm out.
Well, I'm going to add some exit music onto something 5 or 10 minutes ago, I hope, and make a podcast out of it.